Welcome everybody to the R&B podcast. You know it's lit and it's love lighting our path. Be free, be Latrice, can we do it? Holding that talk, cause you know we getting to it. Powered by the king, so our love is his magic. Speaking that truth, and you know you gotta grab it. The love is authentic, so you know you gotta have it. Classic R&B, you now rocking with the badges.
What's up, y'all? It's your girl B and her husband R.
Robert.
R&B, or, you know, being our whatever.
I think it was purpose for R&B. This flows better.
We're back for another episode of the Classic R&B Podcast. This is episode 2.
Yes, we were getting a little deep on episode 1.
You know, we started to. I don't know where you got started getting emotional all of a sudden.
I did. It's really funny. Well, I don't know if I started. I kind of was there. I think if you have not listened to episode 1, go back, because it'll explain where we're kind of going today in the land of, you know what I just thought?
Did you even finish that sentence, bro?
It was going to make sense. I was going to say, okay, you know how my brain works.
Oh, hi.
Passing on joy. But I don't think people know what our daughter's name is.
Hi, sorry. So she,
the pregnant lady's back. Awesome.
She kicks, y'all, and when she kicks, it startles me.
We're just gonna
do
this the whole season.
It startles me, and so if you just hear me say randomly, "Oh, hi," that's because she kicked me and I wasn't ready. We did not even say her name in the first episode. Yeah. Say her name.
So passing joy, not drama, or trauma.
Yeah.
What's our daughter's name, babe?
Our little lady's name is Ms. Kaylani Joy Badgett.
KJB.
Where
did her name come from? How did
it's not a super
that?
Great story. So
I feel like it is, her, at least in my head.
Her name originally came from like something I was watching on like the Disney Channel a few years back. The original name is Kalani. K-A-L-A-N-I. I thought that was really cute, so I wrote it down, and then, you know, we got pregnant and I was like, I really like this name, so we just ended up adapting it. I'm really, really big on names meaning something.
Yeah.
And so I literally even changed the spelling of her name to match the definitions that I wanted it to match. So Kaylani means heavenly, majestic. There's another word that I'm forgetting right now, but heavenly and majestic. And then of course joy. I think you
added joy. My joy. You are my laughter. That's an old school song.
So why did you add the name?
Joy. It was me and God had a conversation. Mm-hmm. Once upon a time, I was married. And then I wasn't. And then there was kind of like this season of singleness. We'll call it 6 years. Single. And I remember him telling me, you're going to have another little girl. And I was like, what? Dude, I'm divorced, single. I don't even know if I got the juice to get married again. Somebody reminded me of this recently. They was like, you said that God was going to give you another girl. And I was like, I did say that. And so I think he later revealed him as like, you know, she will be joy that came back into your world, into your life, in the season of joy. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know what? I get it. And so, if you know anything about my personal story, it was kind of this dark to light, you know, years of challenges, years of a dramatic marriage, mm-hmm, that later ended in divorce. And divorce did not mean that the challenges and pain were over. It just, mm-hmm, mean a level of it was over. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, joy really represents, you can have joy even when you're not happy. Right, joy is at the core. We'll always say like, you know, are you happy? I was like, I think happiness is just it's a temporary state of being, mm-hmm, comes and goes. Are you happy sitting in the cold? No. Are you happy having to walk and your car broke down? No. But that doesn't mean I'm not joy filled. So that's where joy really came for me, for sure. So I'm excited about that, but. You started to say something, about some of your fears, right? Mm-hmm. And I have my own as well, you know, but I definitely want to hear yours more, because you said something key in our last episode. You was like, I don't want to fail her. And based on our upbringings and challenges, like, what does that mean for you? Because even as you said it, it was like you had a visual of what failure would look like as a mom for you.
I think I just want to make sure that she is always aware of my presence in a way that is not superficial, but in a way that I think when she sees me growing up, I think I always want her to know in her heart of hearts, like, that's my mama and she got me, you know what I mean? And there's nothing that she wouldn't do for me. There's no length that she wouldn't go to for me. Like, if I can't go to nobody else, if I can't talk to nobody else, I can talk to my mama. I want to create, and I'm not oblivious obviously to the fact that, you know, parenting has its stages, its phases, and there will be days where she don't like me. Maybe there's gonna be days where I don't like her, you know. Yeah. Like, I'm not oblivious to that, but I think even in those moments there's always this underlining of, but that's my mama and that's my, you know, and that's my baby, and we can fight all day, but at the end of the night, if KJ calls me, I'm pulling up. You feel me? Like, I want her to know, and I want to create this bond from the start that says, like, it's me and you. You know, obviously there's other people in the family, but you know what I mean? Like, I got you. You can depend on me. You can count on me. And I won't ever leave you.
Let me ask you on that. Do you think you and sometimes people in general might be parenting from a place of trauma as opposed to freedom? Like, the stuff that you described, is that largely based on because of your own experiences, letdowns, or this idea of, because so-and-so didn't do this, then I have to do that, right? And I ask that as you think about your answer, because I remember with the first two kids, I just was trying to prove my father wrong. And I was like, I'm gonna do all the stuff that my daddy didn't, right? I'm gonna do this and da-da-da. But the problem is, I was still parenting from like a broken lens. And so I'm playing catch up in competition or competing with my internal self, as opposed to just being a parent, period, for freedom and defining whatever that is without the post-traumatic experiences.
I think it's very possible and probable. I think for me, I don't necessarily view it as like I gotta prove somebody wrong, or, you know, I have a point to prove. Like, I don't really feel like I have a point to prove. I just know what I needed growing up in certain areas, and how much the lack of and the absence of really affected who I became as a person. So I don't even know per se if it's, I think that there are times, and I feel like even in just maturing in this journey as I've been pregnant, there have been times where I've legitimately prayed against parenting out of fear. But I think some of it is just parenting out of experience. You just learn along the way, like, okay, I really needed that. And
what do you mean?
Like, I really needed a certain type of relationship. Like, me and my mom have a good relationship, but it's something that I obviously wish was a little bit deeper or even better. And so as even now, like, we continue to try to grow in that space.
You have a good relationship now. You've always had a good relationship.
I think we've always had a good relationship.
But
has it
been a beneficial relationship?
It depends on how you determine that. Or
because
how you find
good
that.
Doesn't mean bad, but beneficial means it's beneficial.
I think to some degree. I don't downplay what we do have or what we did have, because I feel like even in the state of our relationship, I feel like my mom has always been there. Like, if I called her, she'd answer. If I needed something, she would provide. So it wasn't like she was not there or I couldn't call her, you know what I mean? Like, she couldn't do anything for me. That wasn't the case. I think for me, it was never surface level type stuff, or was never tangible or material things. It was more the emotional stuff that I wanted more of. And again, it wasn't, and I think my mom, she parented like most parents. They parent from a place of what they know. You know, you can't give what you don't have. You can't do what you don't know exists. So she did what she could in those spaces, and so I honor her in that. But I do recognize that there were things that emotionally that I needed, or that I could have benefited benefited from, mm-hmm. that just weren't present in certain areas. And that's something that I think when I think about KJ, it's me thinking, okay, I needed that. I didn't have that. So let me make sure that I provide that for her.
Yeah, I think, I don't think the intentions are bad. I think for me, sometimes we get caught up in a place where we don't have grace for ourselves, where it's, I can't miss none of the games because my parents didn't come to none of my games, right? And it's like, dude, what if you just can't go? Like, it's okay that you just can't go. Or if you miss out on something, or if you drop the ball, that doesn't mean what happened to you is going to happen to them. And I parented like that for a while, where it was like, even after, you know, I was single again, it was largely, I can't let my kids end up screwed up, right? You know, because also being a child of divorce and going back and forth on the weekends and da-da-da-da-da, you know, you try to overcompensate. And sometimes, and I think for me, like, I would parent out of guilt, you know, out of, well, you know, you got to go lighter, you know, because they've been through such and such. Is this something you want to say? Okay, thank you.
Still do that. I'm done.
Okay, that's different because it's from coming from a different place. Now I think it's checks and balances, MC Yeller. But for me, the core of it, I know it was definitely, you know, that. And so, like, again, when I had Robbie, like, he was my first boy, where it was like, oh, I'm gonna be everything to you that my daddy wasn't. I remember telling him that I'm not gonna do this. I'm not gonna. It was like, sir, you really just have some childhood hurt coming out, mm-hmm. and you're projecting that onto your son. And I had to realize that. I was like, no, you're gonna screw up as a parent. You're gonna miss the mark, and it just is. We talked about how, you know, I go to school now, and it's interesting. So I'm working on a presentation about divorce and blended families. Ironic, I didn't even pick the chapter, but it's what I have to present on. And, you know, it talked about how there's a difference. There's not much of a difference between the end results of a child who experiences divorce versus the couple doesn't divorce. They stay married, but their marriage is miserable and dysfunctional. Who you're getting as a child on the other side of that, you may not get a whole lot of differences. The difference becomes what happens after, in terms of what you add, what you do, what you build, you know, your resilience, your new norms and cultures. And like, if, you know, because it's like, oh, well, you know, my parents stayed together for years and I grew up in a two-parent home, but they never talked to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, you never did anything. Versus, oh man, my dad had to move out when I was 7, but he never left my life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I just think that it's interesting how we look at things. I do think trauma is real. You know, I'm not the only one who's going to school. You just finished up a program about trauma. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about your program and why you wanted to do, and it's a word. I think you're the first person I've ever heard talk about mother wounds. I don't know if I've heard that anywhere else.
Yeah, so I just finished up a certification program. Well, almost finished. I have one or two more assignments to do, but I am finishing up, rather, a certification program for trauma recovery coaching. And I have a mental health background. It's what I went to school for. And so I have an affinity for mental health and trauma in specifics, but I recently decided that I really wanted to kind of really dive into that and really be able to offer that to other people, because I think that it's so important. Healing from your trauma in general, it just affects literally every part of your life. There's nothing that trauma cannot affect. It spills over.
Are you aware of how professional you talk?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I get into... talking about,
I love it.
Certain things.
It turns me on.
Oh my God. There is nothing that trauma will not affect, honestly. It can affect, it changes your lens of how you view the world, right? Mm-hmm. And so it really does affect everything. And so I decided that I wanted to be able to offer that to people and to be able to coach people through healing from their trauma. But my specific niche, because I do feel and find that, you know, you need to be able to focus on something. And I've realized, I've always kind of known that daddy issues were a thing for me just due to my childhood. But I've also recently started to kind of dive into the issue or the topic of mother wounds and just kind of like what that means and how that affects people. And I do believe that mother wounds affect people as bad, if not sometimes worse, than father wounds do. And so I specifically want to be able to offer trauma recovery coaching specifically for those of us who struggle with parental wounds in general, whether those are mother wounds or father wounds, and really just be able to help us heal, because I do believe it does affect who you are as a, well, it absolutely affects who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. It affects who you are as a parent. And it affects generally how you show up in this world, you communicate and show up in relationships. Right. And so that's kind of where I am.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. I just love it when you talk about it. Just gets my
arm. Yeah, I can stay tuned. Stay tuned for that service. I'll be offering it in the summer of 2022. Okay? After I drop this kid off, you know, on the earth side.
Boom, boom, boom.
Okay. To drop the kid off earth side.
We're going to stick with 2021 right now.
You can expect
God only knows what 2022
look
is.
Look for in 2022.
Got in store. But I think, listening to you talk, I think that just... So I'm going to school to be a marriage and family therapist. And I think for a while, I've been so anti, like, I like the word coaching. I did not like the word therapy, because I'm just like, people don't, you know, I don't see a lot of folks just growing out of that. You know, even though it's a contradiction, because I grew through therapy, but I just didn't
people
see the...
People go through therapy.
I know. This was my
different
own...
Different strokes for different folks.
This was me not... submitting to an area that I think God was leading me into. So as I'm, you know, learning now, it's interesting because we just had a guest speaker and she was talking about how, you know, the reason why she became a therapist, you know, had a lot to do with her upbringing. And, you know, she was raised in, you know, drug infested environment, addiction and all this other stuff. And she's like, listen, I'm a mess. And I got to get me together, but then I want to reach back and help people out. And I think for me, the storyline of my life, like, it wasn't one that I would have just went through a grocery aisle on and said, hey, let's get that one, you know. But I think as I've gone through it and grown through it, it's like, okay, there are others out here, especially with stuff like divorce, which I still find myself trying to get comfortable with the support and helping people in that area. Mm-hmm. But it's like, as I look around the landscape, I don't see a lot of people helping in that area. It's not like, hey, yeah, there's not a lot of coursework. You got to dig and find reading stuff. And it's just like, it's not a lot of individuals, especially you might as well shoot something in the air and you know, you got a better chance hitting the sky than you would finding a black man really trying to lead in that area. So it's like, all right, God, I get it. Okay, great. But I think to your point, there are many traumas that we experience, right? But people need help managing those and going through those. I have a quick question for you.
I think sometimes people don't even
know. So you're going to answer my question after you go. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think sometimes people don't even know that they're experiencing the effects of trauma. You know, like, I think you grow up a certain type of way and a lot of people just assume this is just who I am, this is just how I am, and they don't actually understand, like, that's not actually who you are. Who you are was altered because you experienced trauma, and there's actually a different you underneath all of that stuff. And so I think that's where help, coaching, therapy comes in. It's honestly me helping you uncover the real you and not just who you think you are. I think there's so many people walking around who don't know themselves because they've been affected by trauma.
You're going right into my lane. You kind of set that up. Let me ask you a question. Do you think I have mother wounds?
Yeah.
What are they? Because I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
So, but are you just generalizing it? Or you can't just generalize it?
Let me think about that.
Based on your experience and exposure with me, and now you're now research into it.
I don't...
Because you said that, you know, you really feel a sense towards helping people with mother wounds.
I just wanted to say because I just felt like I should. But
that's whack.
No, I'd have to think about it. I feel like there are other issues that I see that
I'm
you have.
About
but
mother
I know. I don't know. I'd have to actually think about that more specifically. To be honest, I'm sure that there are some
it's
that
a big
are present.
One. I don't know how you're missing this.
Really?
It's a real big one. It's a big one.
I...
What is the one? What is one of your biggest needs for me and often complaints?
Oh yeah, affection.
Affection.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't. You don't do well with that. You've gotten better in the past 2 years that we've been married.
So
do you see that as a wound?
Absolutely.
Explain.
Because I think that can't nurturing comes from moms.
True.
Vulnerability comes from moms. Comfort in who you are. Like I feel like a father affirms your identity, mm-hmm. but a mother cultivates it. And growing in that level of security, safety, I think from my mom, she was raised by a culture, by a woman who, if you know anything about the South, like even just going back, but this plays a major part. You didn't talk about your feelings. You didn't express your feelings. You balled them suckers up, got them hard. You pushed through it. You did some provisional things as long as your kids were fed, clothed, and we don't really have time for hugs around here. And so even going back to civil rights and slavery and all that other stuff, like to display that level of vulnerability could get you killed.
Yeah.
So you transfer that on generations and generations and then, insert the single black woman who, you know, now raises children or what have you. Listen, they got to do it by themselves. For a small amount of time, my mom was a single mom. But even in her, when she remarried, there was still a lot of things that she had to do independently. And I think for me, it's not organically natural to be at such a deficit affectionately. It's not, you know, it is, I'm not saying that anybody should, you know, everybody has the same level of displaying affection, but if someone wants a hug and you might get tense by that, that's not highly functional.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you're triggered, if you will.
Are you triggered by hugs?
No. I'm just giving it, no. I'm just saying though, but for a while, you know, when I look back to my mental Rolodex, that part, you know, it went well, or the lack thereof, it went well with being cold. So it all fit as a package. And I didn't realize, like, oh, well, sir, this is kind of where that origin happened. She's gotten way better now. But over the years, like my mom, she didn't say things like, I love you. She showed it. But even in when we talk about love languages, there are certain things that I believe you still need to do, like not telling someone you love them, like, well, you know I do. No, they still need to hear it. You know what I mean?
And I think the reality is that, you know, that's also been passed down to your children.
Absolutely.
Both of them, neither of them really care for affection. Mm-hmm. If I tell, especially the girl that I love her, she'll say, okay.
Yep.
She won't say it back. You will get it. I'll get her to say it back once every 10 times I say it.
Yeah.
But her main response is, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I guess even
she
thinking.
She don't tell me either.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. It's now have been passed down to the both of them to where they don't know how to express their affections or their emotions, or they, you know, she expresses her emotions through anger. She's gotten better, but that's how she expresses when something is hurting or bothering her. She doesn't know how to say that hurt my feelings. She's just going to turn into a terror, you know, and he will just shut down and not say anything. Right. He just won't talk.
Right.
And so neither of them have healthy expressions of emotion or affection. And so that is also something that they will in turn end up.
I won't put that.
Well, if they don't, if it's not something that is corrected, you can only do what you know how.
I think one of the if you look at where they are now versus where they've been.
They've gotten better.
They've gotten better. So I'm not going to speak that over one. Their life.
Like, well, I'm not trying to speak anything over their life, but I do think that it takes very intentional effort. And right. I think, you know, you have to continue to push that, because you have one who's, he'll be 18 next year.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's, but he left out the house and said, I love you guys the other day.
No, and I'm not saying non-existent. I don't want you to get offended. But
no, I'm not offended. I don't feel defensive. I don't disagree with you at all. I think in part, one of my fears was with being a single dad was I started to notice that there was things that I'm like, as I started to get a little better myself, I noticed the disconnect there, and I was like, they don't really do X, Y, and Z. And if all they're getting is this exposure to me, this is going to affect them. Like, I literally saw it, and I was like, you're super hard, or you're not sensitive, you know? And I think a lot, I think even with Lanaya, you're having to deal with her, and she had major challenges. Because she was the youngest going through the divorce. Like, she had major struggles and challenges with it. And so watching her tear up schools, you know, assault staff and teachers, and, you know, the only emotion she expressed was anger. You know what I mean? And anger is not a bad emotion, but you got to have that balance. You got to know where to place it. And she did not. And so
anger is actually a secondary emotion.
What's the primary?
It's usually fear.
Yeah.
Pain. Hurt. I think when we think about anger, we assume that, oh, someone's angry, that's how they feel. That's actually not how they feel. Anger is a secondary emotion. So it's how it's expressed, because the person is not cognizant of how to express it any other way. But right. If you think about any time you get angry, you're angry because something hurt. If it didn't hurt, you wouldn't be angry about it. So if I'm angry at you,
you can relate to that really well.
Yeah, I mean, if I get angry because I feel like you're not listening to me, I'm not angry because you're not listening. I'm angry because I'm hurt that I feel misunderstood in the moment because you're not listening to what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So anger is a secondary emotion. And so with her, she didn't have, and sometimes still doesn't, she's a whole lot better, bless the Lord, now, but she didn't have the language capacity be able to say, I don't like this, or this bothers me, or this teacher is being really mean to me.
She
just stayed in a classroom up and throw the desk around.
And that was she didn't know. Man, and me as an adult observing this, I'm like, one sense, I'm like, little girl, you got to find a better way than this. Like, you, but I'm talking to a 5-year-old. And she's like, what better way do I know how to do this or then express it to what do you mean? Or jump on the other side. Listen, teacher, you just need to know or understand, which I do think a lot of professionals fail at. Like, if a child is displaying something, there's a good chance they just don't have the tools to express it appropriately. Like, you are jumping the gun just every time, you just boot them out and kick them and don't.
Yeah,
help them.
But when they tearing up your classroom every day,
yeah,
you know,
I get
there's
that,
a line.
Because I deal with it now.
There's a line.
Not with our kid, but what I'm saying is a cycle.
Well,
like,
I wasn't having it. She wasn't having it. Okay?
She had good minutes, maybe not a whole good day.
Good minutes. You dropped that girl off by 8:00. They're calling you by 8:07. Mr. Badgett, it's time for you to come get your job.
It was actually.
She's already.
yeah, it was a problem. It was a problem, but she didn't. And I think even with the older one, like, looking at him now, I'm not as concerned now as I was then, because he was a little too quiet, you know, and it was just like, I don't know, sir, like, you're not. And here's in context, the world that they experience with us is different from the world they experience where they're not with us. So you're always trying to fight. But also, I think one of the things, I want my children, myself, to be aware, self-aware, right? I don't want to impose any of it. Like, I don't want to say, well, you need to learn to be da-da-da-da. I think some people are just naturally something more than other. I think that's why we have love languages, right? The 5 love languages. There are ways that we receive love. There are ways that we give love. I want you to be healthy in love, right? As opposed to, because what we do sometimes is where we're not like somebody else, we label them as bad or wrong or you need to. I think that's dangerous. But I think what's equally dangerous is when there are parts of you that are dormant or they feel painful, you displaying that, or they feel as though this is just like vomit. I think that's different.
Yeah, I think it's fine to express love and affection and emotions in different ways. I think what's the challenge is when you find that someone expressing love towards you is unnatural, like that feels unnatural to you.
Right.
Like Boom. If I ask you for a hug, you're looking at me like, why are you trying to touch me? Right, you know what I mean? Not saying that you have to come up and hug somebody every time you see them, but when they reach for a hug or they say, yeah, I love you, and you look at them because you're like, that's weird. Like, why would you say that? Right. You know what I mean? Like, you don't, that may not be your primary love language, yeah, but it should never be unnatural to receive love. Right. In that type of way.
It shouldn't be a visceral reaction.
Yeah, like, stop. Like, and not everybody is touchy-feely. And again, but that is all primarily comes from your upbringing. That comes from how you were raised and how your parents handled you as a child. And you know what I mean? And some of that also can stem from other forms of trauma. But how do you plan to navigate that with this new child?
I think in the space that I just said, I think, you know, because my mom's love language was acts of service, right? And quality time, right? So it doesn't minimize what she was able to do. So for me, like, I feel love through acts of service and qualitative time, right? So I healthily am able to decode that. I think what's different is when, like you said, where it's like, I think with this new child, I think pushing yourself to often do the things that you know just might be a little uncomfortable or not organic. I think that's something for me to be self-aware of. I do think, though, it's possible to do that without feeling as though, like you and me, we are two different people. We're wired totally different. You're super affectionate, touchy feeling. Sometimes it's like, dude, can I breathe air? And it's okay. It's fine. This is not from a place of trauma. This is from a place of wanting oxygen.
I'm not that bad.
Okay. Okay. But it's respecting each other's reality of, listen, no, you're still healthy. And, you know, not labeling. And I think for her, you know, watching, allowing her to develop and display, like, what if she is super artistic and likes to creatively draw something to express? I don't want to dismiss that and say, oh, well, you should have gave me a hug instead. Or what if she wants me to draw something back? I want to be more observant to what it is that she's growing into, as opposed to me trying to shape her into what I think she should be. What about you?
I'm going to do what I always do.
Which is what?
I'm going to tell her I love her often. I'm going to hug her and give her plenty of kisses. And cuddle her until she's
old. Are you going to pick up her toys, though?
Sometimes.
I see? Why? See? No. See? You can't. Are you going to play on a swing with her for 7 hours?
Maybe not seven.
But this is what I'm saying.
But, you know, I'll play with her. I mean, that's not the only way that I show love, is by saying I love you.
I'm just responding to what you said.
I also cook. That's a love language for me. I like to feed, you know, people and make them happy with good food. And I will do, like, we will also do stuff. Like, I'm not saying I'm just gonna, but that is how I primarily show love. I say it. I verbalize it. I express it verbally.
I think what I'm going to do the most, which is something that I haven't consistently done with the other two, is raise them up to really understand God's love, to grow in their identity of who He has shaped them to be. I think that is probably, for me, the most healthiest thing that I can do, is to train them up in the way that they should go according to scriptures, to help them develop into healthy individuals, right? Like, because He will always fill in the deficits that we don't hit. I'm not worried about our home being a traumatic place or toxic. No. I do think, though, for both of us being super clinicians,
I think there might be.
Yeah, I am, actually. I think there's a danger of often just looking at something too much through a therapeutic lens as opposed to just letting it be. That's what I think. Just let it be. No, that had nothing to do with nothing. She stubbed her toe. Or her big brother closed the door and said, no, you're not coming in my room. That's not rejection. That's just, no, you can't come in my room.
I don't think I'm that deep.
I'm just...
I don't think I'm that deep.
I beg to differ.
I don't think I'm that deep.
I beg to differ. When it comes to triggers, traumas, and triumphs, you... you do. It's cool. It's cool.
I'm not that deep.
Babe, you are.
I don't believe it.
Okay, it's cool.
Give me an example.
Of what?
Of how I was that deep.
You did. You was like, when, I think when one of y'all were having something, he was like, they don't like me, so chances are they're not going to like her. And that spells rejection. If they do that to her, I'm going to have a problem with it. I'm like, you're going all the way up the ladder with
did
that.
Did I say they don't like me, so they're not going to
like
her?
In that moment, yeah. It was early on. It wasn't like last week or last month. You said that. And so that spells rejection. And so
that was not my primary concern of rejection. That's not where I feel like the rejection would
come
from.
That's what you voiced, though.
I felt like bringing her into a blended family with siblings that the youngest one will still be 12 years older than her. I felt like they just have a bond and a special, you know, relationship. And at the time, they were very not excited about this situation. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like, and I just don't want her to ever come into this home and feel like she's not welcomed or wanted, specifically by her siblings, because they were here before her and they already have this bond and they're already, you know, together. And at the time they were not expressing any type of, you know, affinity towards this, and I'm not ready. And I don't think this is a good idea or whatever. So for me, it was like, as her mom, yeah, I'm like, you know, I'm concerned about the dynamics that I'm bringing her into. Like, is she going to be loved? Is she going to be accepted? Is she going to just be this outsider in her own home where there's different dynamics.
What you said was, though, you said, I quote, rejection, that's a thing for me.
It is.
That's hard for me.
It's a thing
and
for me.
I, because of me being rejected and dealing with it, I don't want that to be projected on her. Right?
And I, to this day, I still stand by that.
Right.
It's a thing for me.
Get it.
And because of the dynamics of our home, even coming down to the fact of our other two children leave from Tuesday nights to Saturday.
Yeah.
Kehlani will never, she's not going to leave. She's going to be here 24/7.
What if they said, can our sister come with us over their mom's house? How would you feel about that? Oh, what if Kehlani asked?
Yeah, I don't know that that's an automatic no, but that's, it's
my little brother
something
asked. My little brother did.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's an automatic no. However, it's definitely something that we would need to explore with the other parent and
she wouldn't
have conversations.
Knowing her, though, she wouldn't have a problem with it. She's different. Sometimes this complexity doesn't make any sense consistently, but she is not the type that, especially because she even works with kids, she's not that type that'll, you know, treat your child a certain way. She doesn't do that. That's one thing that's good, you know. Not saying that there's not many things, but
yeah.
I think if we're talking about bonding, because you've seen all the shows and movies where it's like, all right, who's daddy coming to pick him up this week? You know, and then I remember this one movie. One of the siblings would go with the other brother. You know what I mean? But I think in reality, if we're trying to blend and everybody's equally loved, then that would be a desire. Well, I want to go, or can I? You know,
there's a whole lot to be desired between, you know, within.
No,
our,
what I'm
our
saying is
situation.
For them, not for them. right? I don't see us. If I don't, like I said this to Robbie, I don't know if you were present. I was like, Robbie, I'm just reminding you of something. I said, do you see Jameer as your half brother? He's like, no. I said, so that means you won't have a half sister either, right? He's like, yeah, no, absolutely not. And I was like, so that same kind of bond, it's the same kind of reality. I don't want you to look at this as any different. I said, you and Jameer don't have the same father, but that's your brother. You and Kaylani don't have the same mother, but that is still your sister. And I said that to him because, you know, he has this thought where he turns 18, he's divorcing himself or he's adopted or growing out into I'm no longer. And we'll see what that is when we get there. But I think overall, I don't want to pass down stuff from my own traumatic experiences. I want to parent from a healthy lens. Also, I think you and I kind of developing our own norms are, you know, what matters to the Badgetts. You know, what if it's Tuesday night, whatever night. I think we've gotten a good slow rhythm of stuff, but I know what you look at that. I'm wrapping up here. And I stopped myself.
Go ahead, continue talking.
I don't want to pass on things.
Take your hand off your face.
I want to pass on joy. I don't want to pass on trauma or drama. That's what I was gonna say.
And the only way to do that healthily, I mean, I don't want this whole podcast to just be about us and our experiences, but
we're talking about
talking
about other people's experiences.
Yeah, but I wanna talk about, like, the only way to not do that is to deal with it. You have to
That was about to ask that. What are some things that people can do?
You have to be aware of your trauma. And again, it can be difficult at times to know exactly like what it is that you struggle with, but it's very important, especially for those of us who are parents or who are coming into a parenting journey, to take some time to evaluate, like, not only the great things and not even looking at your past and your childhood as like this whole horrible experience, but really just taking some time to sit down and examine, like, what are some of the things that I experienced that trigger me still to this day. So like for me, I shared, like, rejection is still a thing for me. And so when I think about my child, that is probably one of the few places that you will probably see a different type of me rise up, is if I feel like someone is ostracizing her or she is being rejected just because she's here, you know, and she didn't ask for that. So
what are you going to do to handle and manage that?
I think for me, it's continuing to work through my own stuff. Number one, and continuing to kind of, I think I've, my journey through this whole rejection thing has gotten better as I've maintained and developed certain relationships and just continuing to go and process things through therapy. But dealing and handling my own stuff is the first thing, because again, I can very easily project my rejection issues onto my daughter, even if they don't necessarily exist for her.
Yes, that's what I was trying to say. You just said it better.
However, I am not oblivious to the fact that my concerns were valid. And I think they still remain. I think they are less now. I see it happening less now, especially just having conversations even with Lanaya around her relationship with her sister and how she often brings up her sister in conversations and stuff like that. So I don't fear that as much as I did at one point, but handling your own stuff and being honest about what it is that you carry, talking to those things, like, my husband is aware, like, this is a thing for me. And if I see it, it's going to be something that bothers me. And so being able to have those conversations with him, you know, will be able to help me kind of feel better in moments, or I don't know. He doesn't always make me feel better in moments, if I'm honest, but, you know, just have somebody to talk to about what you're feeling, and continue to, I don't
pacify you in every moment.
Correct. Yeah, but some stuff is valid. Yeah, some stuff is valid.
Some, not all.
Like, this one was valid. Some, not it was
all.
Valid.
Yep. Some, not all. I think for me,
I'm not done talking.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Because I forgot anyway.
Go ahead. Great. I think for me, one of my non-passing traumas on is...
Well, you know what I think?
What?
I think that you have to sometimes step outside of your box a little bit. Because
like
I think when we talk specifically about the dynamics of blended families, it's a very different perspective because this is, for all intent and purposes...
Hold on. You know what I was about to say.
I don't. I actually really don't know what you're about to say. Yeah, but for all intent and purposes...
It's going to speak to what you're about to
say. It
is
your family. Like, I was the outsider coming into the already made established situation.
You ready?
So sometimes I feel like you have a hard time seeing my perspective in certain things because you don't deal with the same dynamics that I have to deal with. And then I constantly have to fight to blend... our family.
Yeah. But I've been you. You haven't been me.
Yeah.
There's no eh. I was in a blended family raising a child.
But you can't compare the two.
Let me finish.
You can't compare the two.
No. I was raising a child that I did not give birth to. I was raising a child whose father at the time that I had to argue with, fight with. I was raising a child also who I did not get a lot of support from the mom. Even though I was the outsider coming in. So my perspective was not always valid. I did not feel supported. I did not feel like I was in a space where I often mattered. So yes, I've been where you've been. But I think, as I said, I think I've been where you've been, which I don't think that you often see. Like, oh, he's not just saying this from the other side of it. He's saying this from inside of it. And then ending where you've given all this to this relationship, to this child who now doesn't even acknowledge you at all, as though you're not even a human. You haven't experienced that. So
it's still different dynamics.
To a degree, I think
even while you were living there, though, the way that the relationship that you had with him is not the type of dynamics that you faced.
How you know? He wasn't there, though, babe.
Okay.
He wasn't there.
I still... I have my perspective.
You do. I'm only saying to you that what it was like, it took a lot of time trying to cultivate, validate, prove myself. And I didn't get the kind of support that you get. Like, I was like literally fighting the biological dad, her mother, where I remember one time her mother was like, listen, I have more rights than you do between... you know, him and your two. And I was like, no, you're one. And we only had Robbie at the time. She was like, look, if you two can't get it together, I'm going to step in here because I got grandparents' rights and I can legally, intervene here and these kids can end up with me. And her, you know, their mom at the time saying, I ain't got nothing to do with that. Y'all figure that out. So I get it. I get it. Being totally a feeling, you know, what you're saying. So sometimes I think that, you know, granted, I don't say all of that all of the time, but the reality is yes, I have also been the outsider stepping in, you know, literally having to almost physically fight individuals. Like, that was a level of experience that I had to deal with, having to deal with the seat that you occupy, right?
Okay.
So I'm just saying that I think for me, passing on, or getting back to the not passing down the traumatic experiences, I think it's just that. I think learning, the part I will agree with is stepping outside of the box of being open to build with a completely new canvas. I think that you do that, though, where one, getting more instruction and guidance from how God is saying to do situations and handle scenarios, as opposed to each of our opinions and our experiences. I think that we could do better at that. I think that ultimately, if we're looking for wisdom, guidance, and how to do things better and effectively, I think that we could go to the source more in how to do these things and how to consider how you should handle a situation. I think for me, the part I will say, like, yes, being a single dad for a while, yes, it does kind of, I have to turn that part off where feeling like, oh, I'm just doing this on my own, how I need to do it, da 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 da. Yeah, I could do way better at that. Where it's like, no, sir, you guys, you're not in crisis anymore. So you can build outside of that narrative and that reality with your now wife as you guys are planning and building together. But again, getting back to what I said, the best way to do that is, God, how do you want us to do this? How do you want us to build this family effectively, appropriately, and trauma-free and drama-free? That's my answer.
Great. Thank you for that very long monologue. Ladies and gentlemen, basically what he said is to keep God first, because if you keep God first, he will give you the instructions on how to successfully blend your family.
Exactly what I was saying.
Yeah, you just did it in a very long-winded way, but you know.
I had to let the Lord speak.
It's all good.
Until next time, folks.
All right, fam. Thanks for joining another episode of the Classic R&B Podcast. We will catch you back here, same place, same time, next Wednesday, 9 a.m.
Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Classic R&B Podcast. To keep the conversation going, be sure to check us out on Facebook at The Classic R&B Life, on Instagram at Our Classic R&B Life, or you can check out our website at theclassicrnblife.com. We can't wait to hear from you.
Peace.